So we've done our whole series on elephants, so we're not doing that again. But this is to illustrate a point. So, six blind men, you maybe know this story, and they're put before an elephant. And so the six of them start having a bit of a kind of feel about what it is that's there in front of them. And so one of them grabs a hold of the elephant's ear and he's like, "Oh, an elephant's kind of like a fan. It's not got much substance. It's quite a thin and delicate thing." But he had a hold of his ear. Then another one grabs its trunk and starts going, "An elephant's like a big snake." And the other guy was like, "It's like a fan. It not got much substance." Then another one, "It's like a spear," because he felt the point of the tusk. Then another guy felt the leg and he says, "No, an elephant's like a tree." And the other ones are like, "It's like a what? How can it be like a tree?" The other one's like, "It's like a wall." And another one, "It's like a rope." Six different things that six completely different views on what an elephant is from one elephant, with six blind people feeling it at the same time. And what's true of an elephant, and we know that an elephant's like all of those things all at the same time because they're big. But what's true of elephants might also be true of holiness. Because you could read any author, and one author might tell you that holiness is one thing, yet another author might tell you that it's completely different, and then yet another author something entirely different again. And we're like, well, I'm perplexed. What is holiness? So we try to build a composite picture. And so, because God has blessed us with something between our ears, we maybe read a few different things about what holiness is, and then we can start to piece things together. Because given enough time, and if you gave the blind guys enough time, and they got together and fuel the whole animal, they would build a bigger picture. And they'd start to understand that maybe it feels like that, but it also feels like this, and it also, you get the point. So, some theologians will tell you, but holiness is like this, and another guy will say, "No, holiness is like this," and another one will say, "Not at all, it's like that." And we need to then use that which God has put between our ears to kind of piece that thing together and come up with what holiness is. But I'm going to share six definitions of holiness, okay? But I've kind of called this sermon six holy, you see what I did there? Six holy inadequate definitions of holiness. Okay? Now you might disagree with these. That's fine. We can chat about it at the end. Or else you might think it's great. But here's the truth. Each definition has an element of truth in it and can be backed up through scripture. But I think as we go on, we'll see that none of them can completely be used to describe God who is holy. You might be thinking, oh, why does that matter? I think it matters a great deal because we're called to be holy as the Lord is holy. I want to be holy. I'm sure you want to be holy. And so therefore, for us to be holy, we need to understand what it is. It's kind of like if we try and describe the Trinity. It's a challenge. It's not easy. It's not something you're going to come up with and explain within the few minutes. So you could say, Abel John, I have a good one on the Trinity. This is great. Think of it like this. Just think of H2O, which is water. So you have liquid, you have solid ice, and you have water vapour or steam. They're three different things, but they're the one thing. And I'm like, it's a wholly inadequate illustration of the Trinity, because those three things, so you can have the liquid, you can have the solid, and you can have the water vapour, but water can't be liquid, solid and vapour at the same time. It's three different stages. Whereas with God, in the whole thing of the Trinity, and the hypostatic union between the three persons are individual, but they're all the same person at the same time. And that's where the H2O analogy falls short. Similarly, if you might like Tunnock's tea cakes, if you're Scottish, you really know what they are, and some of you are like, what are they? They're the wee dome-shaped things of beauty, and they taste wonderful, and they have biscuit, then they have the foamy stuff. What do you call that? It's like a mallowy thing, isn't it? Like a mallowy composite, because it's no like having a marshmallow inside. But we'll go for mallow. I like that. And then, so you have the wee biscuit, you have the foamy mallow stuff, and then the chocolate. So it's three things, but it's the one thing. But again, you can see why it falls short for being a good analogy for the Trinity. An egg, shell, white and yolk, again, you can see why that falls short. So, six wholly inadequate definitions of holiness. Now, I don't think there's a point where you're going to be sitting going, yeah, this is, you'll be like, what? That's a good definition for holiness. John, what are you talking about? I've heard so many people use that. Great. I like that. But it's just not good enough. And if you can be patient enough to not get angry and not get irritated and frustrated and wait until the end of the day and next week, I hope to show you why the six definitions that I'm going to share today are wholly inadequate. So, six misleading and useless definitions of holiness. I should have took the useless bit out, really, but I was getting excited. Holiness is sin avoidance. So Isaiah 1:16, where it talks about wash and make yourselves clean. I understand that. I get that. I don't want to sin. I know that I will, but I want to sin less and less each day, and I'm confident that you're the same. And Jesus plans to present us to himself as holy, unblemished, Ephesians 5:27. So, what's the problem? What is the issue? Why is it inadequate? We're trying to define a thing, holiness, in terms of something that it's not. Sin. Sin and holiness, while they might not be polar opposites, they're this far apart. So why would we use sin as a definition for holiness? They're not quite, but they're almost opposites. So why would we use that? It's like this. Nigel comes to me and he says, John, how would you describe darkness? Now, I could really quickly turn around and give him an answer and say, well, darkness is the absence of light. He probably give me one across the ear and say, aye, clever close. No, Nigel wouldn't do that. He's far too nice. But sometimes you can just give glib answers, can't you? And while darkness is the absence of light, it's so much more than that, isn't it? Or light is the absence of darkness. With two definitions like that, we're not getting anywhere. It just doesn't quite clarify what we're trying to get at. And similarly, using sin as the way of saying that, well, that's not what holiness is, it doesn't tell us what holiness is. Do you understand what I mean? Did I make myself clear enough? Yes. I'll celebrate that later. Holiness is being set apart from something. Now, we talked last week about holiness and how it comes from the Hebrew word kadesh and how it means to be set apart, to be sanctified and, you know, set apart for God's use. I get all that. But holiness is being set apart from something. But didn't Paul say something about coming out and being separate from the world? 2 Corinthians 6, 17 and 18 does say that. Wasn't Jesus separate from the sinners and he was undefiled? He was. Hebrews 7, 26 highlights that. So what's the problem with this definition? Like much holiness preaching, and holiness preaching you can find anywhere on the internet, it's apt to make us allergic to sinners. We're going to wrap ourselves up in spiritual cotton wool and no associate with anybody who's in sin. Now, I've read the Gospels, as I'm sure you have, and what I see in there is Jesus hanging about with a whole lot of sinful folk. A whole lot. Women of ill repute. People that are thieves. People that are tax collectors who are harsh dealing. There's, who else is there? There's people that are in sin, like any Romans, the Pharisees, the Sadducees. He spends time with all those, and there's a whole lot more. He's spending time with people that are in sin. Jesus didn't have an allergy to sin. He didn't sin himself. But he spent the majority of his time with the sinners. And even though he spent time with them, he was untouched by their sin, in as much as he never sinned. But he was a friend of sinners. And God is calling us to be friends with sinners. Jesus spent more time in the presence of sinners than he did in the presence of holiness preachers. That's what he did. Jesus didn't pray that we would be taken out of the world, but he prayed that we would be sanctified in it. And here's the thing. True holiness doesn't run away from anything. So, holiness is being set apart from something, which is right, but it wouldn't be an adequate definition for what holiness is. Another one that's quite common is holiness is moral perfection. Oh, we do have these. Paul, you're great. So, the whole moral perfection thing comes from Leviticus chapter 18, verses 26 to 30. You can go home and read that today. I'm sure it won't leave you brimming with joy. It just won't. Spending time with Jesus, well. This is a popular few verses with those holiness preachers. And that's fine. You know that there's a lot to be said for it, but in Charles Finney was great. He wrote loads of the old hymns, and there's some cracking stories about him and how he interacted with people. But he said, holiness is moral perfection and nothing short of moral perfection or moral rectitude is holiness. But there's a problem with this definition, a major one. You can't work your way to holiness. This is no a thing of works. We know that. Surely 14 centuries of law-keeping covenant teaches us that that's just not going to work. Would as well then just trying to climb to the moon. It's not going to happen. We can never do enough. We can never work our way to holiness. It's through relationship with Jesus. It's no trying and striving for moral perfection. All you're going to get in doing that is incredibly frustrated. And the church is going to do your head in. Other Christians are going to do your head in. The whole thing is just going to drive you mad. There is nothing that you can do other than enter into a relationship with Jesus that is going to get you moral perfection. And if you're in this church, it's far from perfect because I'm in it and you're in it. None of us is morally perfect. It's just not going to happen, folk. Not on this earth. When we get to heaven, when we get to eternity and spend eternity with Jesus, that's where perfection comes. I long for the day. It will be great. But let's try and do something while we're here. And show other people it's no about moral perfection. We're not perfect. But we love Jesus and we've got a story to tell and we can go and tell that to them. Holiness is righteousness. This works well in more traditional establishments. I am righteous. Really? Imagine you had a camera following you 24 hours a day. Let's just see how righteous you are then. If we had a monitor attached to your brain, if there was such a thing, that could tell the things that you're thinking, let's just see how righteous you would be then. And to say that holiness is righteousness, Jesus is known as the holy and righteous one, it's no an awful definition, but it's no the best. Does holy and righteous mean the same thing? I don't think it does. It's like saying Paul is witty and smart. And while he is, that wouldn't be the main way that I would summarise the Apostle Paul. Because I think he is sarcastic. I think he comes across, he's short, sharp and to the point. And apparently if you look in different books and different histories, that he actually was a short guy as well. But he was short, sharp and to the point. There is considerable overlap between holy and righteous, but there's also a difference. God is holy and God is righteous, but they're not identical. So the question again comes up. So what is holiness? Number 5. I like that. Holiness is godliness. Now, I was meaning to have it bounced in. It's great. Ah, simple things. Again, this is not a bad definition and it's biblical. You ought to live holy and godly lives. 2 Peter 3:11. Great. This is good stuff. But it's not a particularly useful definition. It's like saying God is godly. Of course he's godly, he's God. Yeah, he's God. Saying God is godly is a bit redundant, isn't it? Of course. course he's godly. We want to be godly, but we're not God. What then makes us godly? Holiness. But what is holiness? It's kind of like God is godly is like saying flowery flowers. Flowers are flowery because by definition they're flowers. Just on that though, I know there's some people in here who really, really love lilies. Oh man, the smell is so strong, isn't it? Does anybody hate it? It's ghastly, isn't it? Oh, it makes me sick. I'm just like, now, I love that people like lilies. But whenever we get them, see that wee orange bit that stains everything? And if you get it on your clothes, you're done. No matter how much Vanish you use, you have to cut the wee bits out, don't you? And get rid of it. You do that, don't you, Paul? You cut that wee bit out. Oh, and it lessens the smell. They look gorgeous. They really are beautiful looking things. But the smell is horrendous. But it's kind of like saying, holiness is godliness is like flowery flowers or banana-y bananas. Have you ever noticed how bananas smell like bananas? You've never really thought about it, have you? Bananas smell like bananas. They just smell banana-y, if that's a word. But would we expect anything less? Like, you don't expect to pick up an apple and it smells orangey, do you? Oh, that's an orangey apple. No, it's an apple-y apple, because it's an apple. That's a banana-y banana because it's a banana. It tastes like a banana because it's a banana. There's nothing here trying to trip us up. But to see that holiness is godliness, on the one hand, it's kind of good, but it doesn't really, in common parlance, cut the mustard. So, then number six. Holiness means worthy of devotion. I got this for the dictionary. And it does apply to a holy God. At last. Something that does. And he is worthy of our worship. That's why we worshipped him this morning. For about 25 minutes. We gave him praise and glory and honour. And we thanked him for what he has done in our lives. And we told him, we don't want to ride in somebody else's passion. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be dry bones. We want to burn with passion, with fire, don't we? Because if we don't, what's the point? We're as well sitting in the house and watching all the political programs that are on a Sunday morning. I mean, if we don't want to burn with passion for Jesus, why are we here? Why come out in the lashing rain? Well, it stopped now. Why come out in the lashing rain? Kind of like, oh, I could have been preparing a Sunday roast, you know. But we'll go. It's like, I was listening to Stephen Furtick yesterday. Do you know who he is? If you've never listened to him, he's great. He's really good. But he was saying this, that people pass up coming to church for the most bizarre reasons. And he used the analogy that, he says, so you've got a son who's 13 and he's passionate about soccer. He's like, let's face the truth here. He's never going to go professional. He might be good for where he lives. He was told when he was 9 that he was above average. But the fact that he going to go professional is highly unlikely. He will go to college, he won't get a scholarship, and you're driving him around three states to take him to football matches, and then you're saying, oh, we won't go to church on Sunday because Bobby's got football. And what does that instill in Bobby? It instills in Bobby that soccer's more important than God. I'm not having a go at sportsmen and sportswomen and whatever you do stuff. But what is more important? And he says, is it any wonder then that when Bobby becomes 30, that he had two broken marriages? Because God isn't the first thing in his life. Now that's painting a bleak picture. God is worthy of devotion. He's a holy God. We want to be a holy people, a God. We looked at 1 Peter last week when it says, I have called you chosen, a holy nation, a royal priesthood. A people belonging to me. His special possession. Do you know you're special? You are special. Man, you should be grinning from ear to ear with that news. You're special. You can go up to somebody. Now, saying this and walking up to somebody like, how are you? I'm special. People are going to think something strange. But you're special. See me? I'm special, me. And you are special. Because you're his. You're a holy nation. You're a royal priesthood. You are his special possession. You are a people set aside for him. He is worthy of our worship. But let's get this. Mark 8:38 tells us that the angels are holy too. Oh no. I missed it. Do I need to worship them as well? No. We don't worship. Some people do that. It's not a good thing. Don't worship angels. God created the angels. But he says that the angels are holy as well. And I'm like, I'm a simple kind of guy. This is starting to get confusing. If they're holy and God is holy and we worship God because he's holy, then why do we not worship angels? Because it says they're the same as him. What about we start to worship each other? That could be fun. Nobody looks happy. But, no. So, God is holy. Psalm 99 verse 9 will tell you, but God's holy. Mark 8:38 will tell you that the angels are holy. And that passage that we just spoke about from 1 Peter says, I have called you chosen, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. That means we're holy. So, if we worship God because he's holy, does that not then mean that we worship each other because we're holy? This is starting to get confusing. Because that's three things. So here's the truth. Are we, if holiness means that we're worthy of devotion, then we must be worthy of devotion. Do you see my point? So that holiness means worthy of devotion. See the point? But we're holy. Angels are holy. We don't worship each other. I don't go into Nigel's house like, Nigel, how are you, Nigel? Good to see you. Hey, but I don't do that. He doesn't come to my house and do that either. We don't worship angels. We don't do that. We worship God. And because we worship him, he likes it so much that the holiness that he has, he says, do you know what? I love you so much, and you're worshipping me, which is what I want you to do. But because I'm holy and I love you so much, I want you to have some of that. And he gives us some of that holiness. But because he created us in his image, therefore, there's an element that we have a holiness. And similarly, when he created the angels, he made them. And so therefore, he gives them a wee bit of that holiness as well. But that doesn't mean that we're devoted to one another and that we start worshipping each other or that we start worshipping angels. We worship him. He's the creator. He's the author of all things. And so when you say holiness means worthy of devotion, well, understand where you're coming from, but not entirely. It's a wholly inadequate definition of what holiness is. So either there's two different kinds of holiness, one for God and one for us, or this is just a really, really rubbish definition. Do you see where I'm at with this? So, let's finish with this for today. I did say this earlier, and I have concluded that holiness is like elephants. Can we go back to that elephant thing? You've just undid everything I've done. There we are. Holiness is like elephants. What is true of elephants may be true of holiness. Each of the six definitions that we just gave is partly true, but wholly wrong. Partly true, there's a kernel of truth in every one of them, but wholly, they're inadequate. Each comes close-ish. Close-ish to the target, but doesn't actually hit it. Doesn't hit the target. So you're sitting. All right, clever clogs. What is holiness? This is like the programs on TV, but next week, we're going to take the blinkers off and find that. But what is holiness? And here's what I have to say at this stage. It's better than what you think. It's better than what you think. I can tell you this for sure. You won't be disappointed. You won't feel let down. You won't feel as if you've been robbed or if it's been stolen, taken away from you. You won't feel any of that. And I hope with my whole heart that when you find out what holiness, what it really is, you'll be thinking, yes, that's what I want. That's what I need. That's what I long for. Those wholly inadequate definitions will just become fleeting thoughts when we clarify what holiness is. Next week, remember, it's better than what you think. So, just before we finish and before we pray, I asked you the challenge last week. Who was here last week? A few folk were here. Just some. And so I asked you the challenge last week and kind of we won't go into that. So the challenge was this. If you spend, how long was it? 30 minutes every day with Jesus. What did they say would happen?
You'd probably end up wanting more time.
Mm-hmm. You'd end up wanting more time because it changed your life. Did they say that? Can it lie? So, 30 minutes. So if you weren't here last week, I'm going to issue the same wee challenge, because you can start this. You could even start it tomorrow. We're that gracious here. So, half an hour every day. Do you know? And we talked about the whole distracted thing. Do you know, like, I mean, do you know when you talk about easily distracted? Every. Do you know when your report from school? Every report from school. Like, if they gave you two reports, it would have it on both of them each year. Every one of mine, easily distracted, big exclamation mark, with a circle underneath it to emphasise, don't miss this. But everybody knew, because I lived with my mum and dad. But easily distracted, that's me. So if you're even remotely easily distracted, pray in the dark. It's good. But here's the thing. 30 minutes. My challenge to you is this. Starting tomorrow, 30 minutes. In, you know, go in to your room and lock the door. Like what it says in Matthew 6. You know, go and do that. Go and do that for half an hour. And just spend half an hour with Jesus tomorrow. And then do it on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then start again on the Monday. And you do that. Now, I can virtually guarantee that you go and do that for half an hour. Within a month, you're going to be like, John, I can't keep this up. It's too much of a challenge. Know that you want to quit. No. You'll be like, 30 minutes isn't long enough. I need more time. And you start stealing more time through the day to spend with Jesus. That's a good thing. Because you want to be more like him. You want to know more about him. And guess what? You can find out even more about him. He's got a book out. And you can read about him in his book. And then you can spend time talking to him. Change your life. Half an hour. Within a month, it won't be long enough. Before you know it, you'll be 45 minutes. And you're thinking, this is revolutionary. He said 30 minutes, this is 45. What am I going to do? And then in a few months, who knows, you might even spend an hour. This Jesus thing's great. I never discovered this before. And in that, we become holy. But we'll tell you what